Discovery's four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
3, 2, 1, 0, 0.
Hello, world, and welcome to a very exciting episode of the GadgetCast. We got a lot to talk about. My name is Gregory McFadden, joined always with my co-host, Travis MCP.
Space travel.
Hey now, we're here, made it. Thank you for doing some space traveling as he just tried to hit that nail. I'm surprised that you just don't have like something that you always say the exact same way every single time. You're always struggling to figure it out.
I haven't figured it out. I wanted to keep it dynamic. I didn't want, like, I could just record. We could literally record something. I could press it on the soundboard, and we could go every week and be ready to go without a hitch. But, you know, I want to be more dynamic. I want to be live. I want to have something to say every week. I used to, like, think about it. Like, I should come up with something really, like, smart to say. And then, you know, I've been kind of winging it. Like, okay, I'll see how I feel. I'll think of something as the intro song's playing. And sometimes,
I mean, if you like doing it, if it's enjoyable to you, it's a challenge, then you know, go for it.
I should just go like, hey now.
Thank you.
That should just be every week of the show. Apple just had their event, a lot of stuff to talk about, with their April event. We got new iMacs, AirTags are finally a thing. I thought they were a conspiracy theory this whole time, ridiculous new iPads. And, there was something else, wasn't there? Oh my gosh. Am I forgetting something?
iMacs. Did you say iMacs?
I said iMacs, right? Is that everything?
Well, so there's services, a couple of services, and there's
the podcasting subscription service, the Apple, you know. Yeah.
By the way, GadgetCast $100 every episode from now. I'm sorry,
you know,
everybody.
We wanted to announce, you know, this episode's free, but we got a nice deal for you guys, $100 per GadgetCast episode on Apple Podcasts. You know, we think it's the most premium podcast subscription service ever. We're going to throw, you know, some extras your way. You're going to see what Travis is having for breakfast every single morning. And, you know, every once in a while, I'll upload a special episode, you know, just going over fashion advice. And, you know, that's going to be GadgetCast going on. That's going to be the new GadgetCast.
Oh, Apple and don't forget the GadgetCast iPhone finally was announced, and the Apple TV.
Yes. The Apple TV is the other thing. That's what I forgot about the Apple TV, because it's a very like minor update, but we'll get into that. As we go along this busy tech show. But yeah, should we just start with the Apple stuff? Should we go like
order? Yeah, of course. Because there's some other stuff going on outside of tech, of Apple, but there's so much right now with Apple that we need to kind of go over.
Yeah, it's a big show to react to. We got a ton of videos up with our own thoughts and opinions. We can expand upon that here, so it's probably going to take up the entire show. So, you know, if you're a true GadgetCast fan, you got to get the purple GadgetCast iPhone. I think that's like the, you know, that's just to show it. Slap a GadgetCast logo on the back. Make sure you're wearing your purple GadgetCast hat. And, you know, that's the GadgetCast experience. Remember when we were so obsessed with GadgetCast colors that we were looking to, like, colorize, like, every single thing we had?
Yes.
And I think with all these Apple announcements, we could probably finally do that with a lot of, like, their products now. So,
We wanted a GadgetCast phone. We talked about that, but we never figured we would see a purple phone from any of the larger manufacturers, certainly not Apple. This is perfect. It finally fits into our master plan. You get a purple iMac. Yeah. You can get a... how close to purple can you get an iPad? I don't know. Not very close. And then, of course, your purple iPhone. I see people unboxing the purple iPhone. The funny thing is, like, you almost can't review that because it's literally just an iPhone with a different color. So I don't know. I've seen some longer videos on YouTube that I don't see the point of. But I mean, obviously, if Apple's sending it to you, you got to do something with it. And I love the color, but it is only on the iPhone 12. I hate the fact that the pros get left out of the fun colors. I hate that. I'm not a fan of that. But other than that, some great stuff. Let's start with the iPads, because I've done a couple of videos on that. I know you did a video, I thought you were going to do a video the other day on it, but I don't think you came out with it.
No, and then we'll get into the iMacs. That's still work in progress, that video. I was going to release it today, and after how good the reception was on my last video, I want to take a little bit more time with them. Like, let me see if I could do something with this that's a little bit different.
Mm. Look at you. Mm. Yeah, so let's talk, and then we'll talk about the Apple TV and the IMAX and all the things.
Let's get rid of the boring stuff first. So iPhone 12 Purple. Let's be honest. It was okay. Yep. Apple TV, new Apple TV, A12 chip. I was looking at the one we have now, the Apple TV 4K. It's still called the Apple TV 4K. Mm-hmm. And the one we have has an A10X in it. And I was like, A10X, A12, how big of a jump is that? And like CPU, it's like a modest jump. Okay. But I was actually looking at like the graphics, which I think is like, there was like rumors that maybe Apple wanted to push gaming. I know the A12 is like a more recent architecture, but like just on like a benchmark, and I know you can't really judge it on a benchmark, right? Like there might just be more support for the A12 that makes it better for games. But just on like a like raw speed kind of thing, the A10X is faster in graphics. So I'm kind of like, if I buy this Apple TV, is it a downgrade, an upgrade, a side grade? Not like a lot, but like, I don't know. Like I'm looking at like a number on like, it's like in like the thousands. Like, I don't know, like if it's like 200 weaker compared to the other one, I don't know realistically how much weaker that is or if it even makes a difference. Or again, it's newer silicon. So maybe like, maybe developers support it better and your games are going to end up looking better. But on paper, I was just kind of like, that's it. That's all they put in there was an A12. I was actually, I think John Prosser was saying for like the longest time, and I think like this is like old GadgetCast days when like he was on the show, he sent us like a picture of like Apple TV with the A12X in it. And like, that's what we were expecting. And I guess maybe they backtracked on like that strategy of like leaning into gaming. But yeah, I just thought it was weird that I was kind of expecting something like bigger for that upgrade. Not that it matters. Like you're the one who was telling me before, like, what do you want? A more powerful Apple TV? And it's kind of like, yeah, I guess you're right. Like I kind of don't. But they updated the remote on it, which is interesting. I think a lot of people have complaints with that remote. I kind of don't. So I'm interested to see if I'll like the new remote. And do you have trouble with the current Apple TV remote?
Well, in fairness, I use my Logitech Harmony. Okay. So I have a smart remote that I don't, so I never use it. But when I did use it, it was fine. I guess I didn't use it enough for me to hate on it like everyone else does. And obviously they did do a good thing by allowing you to have a new remote with this one. But, you know, also if you have an iPhone, your iPhone can be a remote for your Apple TV.
Yeah.
But interestingly, they have this new thing where it will now color correct using your iPhone. Now, what makes this interesting isn't so much the color correction, but that they are connecting your iPhone to the Apple TV to kind of check your room for coloring and stuff. And that is some next level out of the box thinking. So beyond the configuration itself. So I'll never use that setting because, my TV, I have set up in a certain way and, you know, I don't want the Apple TV to then do additional color correction above and beyond what I'm doing on my TV. But most people don't even go into the settings to do this. So it's actually a really good thing for most people. But that's so out of the box thinking that I'm now like kind of excited. What else are they thinking like that? Like no one that I know of has said anything about, your iPhone's going to help coordinate the colors on your Apple TV. So then you start thinking, the iPhone is so powerful in that it has all these sensors that things that don't have those sensors that need to be less expensive, if they can piggyback off an iPhone or something that you have, holy crap. Like there's all types of amazing technology that could come from that. And it's no one's talking about it. And I don't want to pat Apple on the back so much because not everything they announced was like the most amazing thing, but that is probably the most overlooked thing of that entire presentation. Like, holy crap. They have thought of a way to pass that information. I assume through Bluetooth, but maybe Wi-Fi, who knows that information. And then have your Apple TV make the adjustments based on the camera from your iPhone. Wow. Now to your point, if you have an iPhone 4K like me, I am not going to upgrade. There's no reason for me to. I don't know if the gaming is going to be better or not. The only reason why I think it makes sense is because they have so many products now with the A12. I mean, the base level iPad is A12, yeah. Right? So it's just probably a cost savings if nothing else.
Right.
So if you look at it from that perspective, It's not something that you'd want to upgrade to unless you don't have the 4K version of the Apple TV already. If you don't and you want to get a 4K Apple TV, then yeah, go ahead and get that one. But man, what an interesting little product where it would have been really underwhelming, but this little piece of technology to me is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that works on the older Apple TVs too, apparently, that color correcting technology. It's just software at this point. So it wasn't like a new hardware feature of that TV, but it's, you know, the benefit of the Apple ecosystem. Your phone has all like these like advanced sensors that could, you know, do color correcting, and you would never think to use it for that. But Apple's like, oh, you know what? We have a phone. We sell an Apple TV box. We can make this so simple. And you're 100% right. You know, the average consumer, they take the TV out of the box. That's it, right? You're lucky if they connect a soundbar to it. And they're spending no time going into the modes and like doing color correction and stuff like that. So for Apple to do that, and you know, potentially provide a much better experience for their Apple TV customers, I think that's really smart. I think that's really cool. And it's definitely a neat use of technology you already have laying around, because chances are if you have an Apple TV, there's probably a pretty good chance you own an iPhone. The remote, you know, I think that's probably like the bigger upgrade. I know a lot of people were kind of complaining about the old remote. That's like the biggest complaint people have had about the Apple TV. So, you know, them issuing that new remote, hopefully it works for more people. Hopefully it's a good experience. And the fact that it's a little bit cheaper than the older remote and you can still buy it for your old Apple TV, you don't have to run out and get this new one, I think is also a nice thing. So, you know, it's like a side upgrade. If you have the existing Apple TV 4K, it looks like there's really no exclusive feature to get this, unless you're really excited about like 60 frames per second HDR content, which this one can do, and apparently the old one couldn't do. But I think that would only really work in their example with sports content. And I'm not too well versed enough in like sports content. Travis, are they shooting like 60 frames per second HDR sports at this point? Or
I know that every so often you'll see stuff like that pop up. You know, it's like special events, but it's not like a regular thing.
Yeah.
Yet. I mean, who knows if it will be.
Yeah. Like I know like broadcast, like TV, like it's usually like pretty behind. I remember when like 1080p sets were like really popular and like a lot of shows were either still shooting in 720p or 1080i. And it like took them a long time just to get up to speed with HD. And now we're seeing kind of that same thing with 4K, where finally, I think, today now on a lot of these streaming services, it seems like 4K is pretty much kind of like the standard now. But I think, you know, as we roll out to these HDR TVs, that's just a whole other process where, you know, I think a lot of the streaming services like Netflix, to their credit, have it figured out. But like broadcast television and I'm guessing sports, I'm guessing like you're going to have to drag them a little, you know, kicking and screaming a little bit, because they're kind of stuck in their ways. You know, they're not in like that technology race like a Netflix would be. But, you know, if they do it for like special events and stuff, I guess that could be worth it. And then AirTags, right? AirTags was the other big thing. I think we missed that too. That looked interesting to me. I got to give Apple credit here. You can go back and listen to like every GadgetCast episode we've done, and I'm pretty sure I'm like, AirTags, not interested, don't care. Might not even order a pair. I don't know. Like I want to kind of cover everything. I was, you know, in doubt before seeing the presentation. I was like, what are these going to be? Tile trackers from Apple, and they're going to be like $50 each. So going into this, I wasn't excited for them. And to Apple's credit, these actually look pretty interesting. And I think the price point, I think they did a good job. $29 for one of them. And then a four pack for $100. That's not unreasonable. That's like a pretty good competitive deal.
All right, Greg, before I give my thoughts on this, tell me what you think most people will use it for. And I know you're buying them just to buy them, what you are going to use them for. And then I'll tell you what I think.
I think most people are probably going to use them for like keys. I think a lot of people will use them to put in their luggage. I also think, and even though Apple kind of said it's not meant to, you know, track people or pets. I think that's more of like a liability thing. I think a lot of people are going to put these on like their dog collar, on their dog's collar, and track their dogs and stuff like that. So yeah, like purses, keychains, all that kind of stuff. Keys and bags, for sure.
So I agree. Keys make sense. I love the idea of pets. I don't know how the pet thing will work. Nathan, you know, my dog, I can't imagine he'd ever get loose because he's always home. But, you know, he used to be an escape artist, which is something that yeah. I always was worried about. Like, you know, if he would ever be, he's older now, so he's not really into that sort of thing. But pets for sure. Now, I'm still unclear exactly. Like, I saw a video that Justine did, and she showed how it worked, and it looked amazing. But it was all local, right? So it was all within our home. I still need to see this work far away. In other words, I want to take this thing a mile and a half away, throw it out the car window, and see if someone else can find it. And I don't think it'll work in that instance because I think you need to be near other iPhones. But it might in a downtown area where there's a lot of. That's what I want to understand. And by the way, do those iPhones have to have a certain software update to detect them? And if so, because you know not everyone updates their iPhone, you know if it. Will it be lost for a while until people start updating their iPhone? Like, I have so many questions about this. And then, of course, there's the privacy thing, which I'm sure Apple has on lock. But it's things like that. Like, how well will this actually work? It's not exactly like Find My Phone or something where essentially the GPS is working and it's telling you it's directly connected to a cell network and telling you all of those things. This thing is basically just a beacon. And it needs to connect to something. And not everyone has their Bluetooth on. I'm assuming that this is a Bluetooth beacon because it's the only way to get it like really low energy, right? Mm-hmm. So what if like the people in your age don't have their Bluetooth on? I mean, I guess a lot of people do, but a lot of people turn it off just for the battery savings. So I'm just curious about all of these things. I would like to see some really in-depth tests. I know the people that needed to get it out for the embargo really just did something quick, and I think they were all well done. I think even iJustine's was kind of fun to watch. But I just have deeper questions.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of the reviewers just got them. So like with like an iJustine and stuff like that, I'm expecting some more like thorough tests, but you know, for like the first video when you get them unboxed and you got like these short embargo times, it's like, all right, let me track it around the house and stuff like that. Yeah. I think The Verge did have that kind of idea where they sent someone out to take whatever was on the AirTag and put it in a location and see like, hey, can you go find this if I you know, take it? Mm-hmm. I actually thought of, you know, when I eventually do my video on this, I think I'm going to try something similar. I'm going to call up one of my friends and be like, hey, can you know, just take this bag, go put it somewhere. I want to see if I can track it down and find it. You know what I mean? Like, don't tell me anything. Don't tell me where it's going to be. I want to see how good this technology is. And if we can find something, maybe I won't do a bag. Maybe I'll just attach an AirTag to something in case we do lose it. Because I don't want to be out of like expensive equipment.
I want to do something kind of crazy.
Go ahead.
I might buy it and try it. I don't want to say because I don't want anyone else to do it before me because I don't even have it. And I haven't even ordered it yet. So now I'm looking at the website going, do I just need to order it from the website or can I get it fast from somewhere else? Are they only selling it on the website or can you go on like Amazon or something?
I think I saw like Best Buy have it.
Oh, and then of course you need something to, this is the biggest pain in the butt. It doesn't attach to anything by itself. So these tags are not, the only way that it's a $29 tag is if you put it in your purse and you just leave it knocking around in your purse because you don't know where your purse is. Almost any other configuration of that, you need to have some type of band, which means it's an additional however much. Apple right now, once all the Amazon sellers start catching up, they'll be cheap, $5, $6, probably many different colors. But for the time being, like if you go to Apple's website, they start at what, like $20 and go up to like $500 or something stupid.
Well, to Apple's credit, again, they had a wide range of like partners and stuff like that. So Apple's version is like, I think like $20 or $35. But they have ones from like Belkin for like $10, I want to say. So at least they have some of the partnerships already there for some of these cheaper chains. And you're right about that. Yeah. The Belkin secure holder with key ring is $12.95. So that's something, right? It's not like, oh, I got to pay another $20, you know, $13 again. You're right. You have to add that onto the cost of the AirTag. Some of them you don't have to attach a tag to. You can just throw it in your bag. But a lot of these are going to be on like key rings and stuff like that. So there is another cost to this, where a lot of these tile trackers would just have kind of like a hole in it, so you can put it on an existing key ring. It's kind of an interesting strategy. I wonder, design-wise, why Apple didn't choose to include that. I think basically any other tile tracker basically has a little hole in there already. And then they even have like ridiculous ones. So they have like the Hermes version, and it's like $450. It's like, what? Like, are you that concerned about losing something if you could spend $450 on this like little AirPod holder?
Why is it the holder is much more expensive than the actual thing itself? Like, that is a flex in a situation at a level that doesn't make any sense. Like, you really, what it is, you know what you're actually doing? The AirTag is for the holder. It's not the other way around. Like, the AirTag is to find that holder, because the holder is so expensive.
I don't think I have like a bag worth $450, let alone this little holder. It's ridiculous.
Steal
the holder and leave the AirTag, sell that, and I guess you're good.
Bro, I mean, I don't know. Listen, this thing might end up being really excellent. I don't know. I'm ordering as we speak. I'm going to order one, and I'm going to play around with it and see if I can figure out if this thing is worth the time. I will withhold my thoughts until I have it to play around with it and really kind of feel like yes or no. But definitely stay tuned to GadgetCast as I give my feedback for sure. I'm sure you're going to do a full video on it. Unless I get to do this really kind of fun thing, I'm not going to make a video on it. But if I get to do this fun thing and it kind of becomes an interesting video, then I will I have some ideas. So yeah, let us know. Leave us a comment or drop us an email or a voicemail. Let us know what you think about AirTags, and are you going to get any? And if so, how many? And what are you going to use them for? We'd love to know that. Maybe you're going to put them on your kids, so you know where your kids are.
I would if I had kids. Had kids. Each one of them, like, eat this AirTag. I'm not buying that key ring holder. That's too much money. So eat the AirTag and go to school.
Yeah.
And then we'll sort out. You know, every night you got to eat the AirTag again. We got to sort this out. No, one other cool thing. If you have like one of the newer iPhones, like an 11 or up, they all have that U1 chip in it, which this AirTag has. And then like, say like you did lose something and then like you get close enough to it. I believe it's within like 50 feet. Like you'll get like, you hold up like your phone and it will point you in the direction of where the item is. And I think that is like such a cool feature. Again, like, I don't know, like, I do like misplace things around the house. So like with keys and stuff, like this could be like saving 5 minutes of my time some days, and maybe that's worth it to me. But like losing something, I don't really ever do. So I don't know. I don't know like if it's really worth it for me. Again, I just ordered them because I wanted to cover them. I thought the pricing was good enough to where I could just order them anyway. I was shocked by the price. I really thought Apple was going to be like $50 for one. And you know what? $4.99 a month so we can use it. So I think it looks like a good value if this is a product that you can use. And, you know, I haven't used these yet, but I feel like if it's using the entire iPhone network of devices, I can't think of like a bigger network of devices out there that are, you know, I mean, like this seems to be the best version of a tracker if you're using an iPhone.
So. Okay. By the way, I just looked on Amazon. I take it back. There are tons of the little things.
They're ready right to now. Go. They had them out like weeks before at this point. Like they knew that it was coming.
Yeah. I definitely would say, they even have Mickey Mouse looking ones. So, okay. Yeah. You have your options. And Tile apparently is, suing Apple for the launching AirTag. Of course, why wouldn't they? This could be the end of Tile. I mean, not really, because obviously there's Android side of like needing that sort of thing. So they still could service that, but I'm sure a large portion of their customer base are Apple users. So, if these come out and work well, that would be very detrimental to Tile. So obviously they're going to try to figure out a way to see if maybe they're using their technology or something like that. So, but I'm sure Apple is well aware of this, well in advance, and are probably okay with that.
I get why like the Tile people are like doing that lawsuit. But, and I, you know, we're in a thing where like big tech and, you know, there's kind of like this crackdown and like, do these companies have too much power? I don't know if releasing like a little tile tracker is like, oh my God, these companies have too much power. Like it's a very low stakes product. There's better conversations we could be having with like big tech, like swallowing up all these companies. A little tile tracker, I think, is like almost like the wrong case to bring against Apple. And for like Tile, I just feel like, yeah, like Apple's making this, but so is Samsung. And so are a lot of other people. Like, how come you're not suing them too? Or I don't know if they were, if it's like a Fortnite thing. Nikias in the chat wants me to do an AirTags taste test. Hey, I'm telling you, if you're a, you know, if you're a struggling YouTube channel out there and you want to bump those views, I say eat an AirTag. And I think that's a viral video. I don't want to give that advice. Maybe, you know, I don't want to be held liable, but you know, that sounds pretty viral to me.
Please don't do that, anybody. Okay. let's move on to something that doesn't get us sued. Okay.
Can you imagine if GadgetCast got sued because I made a joke about eating an AirTag?
Well, they're going to be really sad when they try to get any kind of money from GadgetCast. They're going to be like, oh, this was a waste of time. Because there is no money.
You could see the headline too, right? You could see it like, dun, 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 CNN headline. Prominent YouTubers tell kids to eat AirTags, and the kids are doing it for the AirTag challenge. Oh my God, it's going to happen. Like, that's going to be like a news story, isn't it? It's going to happen. There's going to be so many of these AirTags sold. I'm picturing this story in my head. I think it's going to happen.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so let's see. In-stock me for. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and order this stuff, and I'm going to try. So I have an idea for something that could also go viral. We'll see. I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about the iPad Pro, baby. As someone who uses the iPad Pro for all of my videos on YouTube, of course, I waited with bated breath to see exactly what this thing was all about. And, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to get it or not. I will. I'm going to pay too much because, A, I am going to stay with the 12.9 because I want to see the mini LED, right? I definitely want to see that. I am going to probably have to get another Magic Keyboard, which I am furious about. Now, there are very conflicting reports about whether or not you actually need to do this. So what I'm probably going to do is purchase the Magic Keyboard just in case.
Yes, smart.
And then use it with my existing Magic Keyboard and see what happens. Because I'll guarantee you, when I try to sell my iPad Pro, some people are going to be like, I don't think I want your Magic Keyboard. And I'll either just have to take a complete loss on it and say, just take it. Or I'll have to, I don't know what I have to do. Like I said in my video, I'll throw it in the ocean. But this is a massively ridiculous situation that Apple has put us in, if this is exactly what it is.
So they made the iPad thicker. We'll talk about this to incorporate that mini LED. So like maybe it was like an oversight by them. Like, oh, wow, like the current keyboard with like this new thickness, like it doesn't work. I suspect Apple, because there's conflicting reports, right? I suspect maybe it doesn't work up to Apple's like standards of like, hey, if it's thicker and you like fold up the Magic Keyboard and close it, does it like close all the way? Is there like a gap or something? I'm guessing that like, hey, if you set up your Magic Keyboard and like magnetically attach the iPad to the back, would it still connect and work? I'm guessing that's yes, because it's only thicker. It's not like it got like bigger in dimension. So everything should still line up. I'm also guessing that the like increase in like the little increase in weight it had wouldn't be enough to suddenly like topple it over, because they gotta give some like weight clearance for that. So I'm gonna guess like, hey, if you really wanted to use your old Magic Keyboard, I bet you could. Maybe it doesn't fold as well, but maybe that's enough for you not to have to spend $350. Maybe you'll just kind of deal with that. Would you deal with that, Travis? Like, hey, you could just like prop it up and type on it still.
Listen, for $350, I'm willing to accept a lot of compromises at this point. I mean, if the thing barely holds on, I might still, because I'm not, no
one
wants to do
it. It just topples over.
It just topples over. Listen, that's fine. It's fine. It's the way it's supposed to be. I don't think this little bit of thickness is really going to make it so it doesn't work. Some people were speculating maybe the magnets are in a different place. That seems unreasonable. Not impossible, but unreasonable. But one thing that does, and I put this in my video, that does worry me is when you look on the Apple website for the compatibility of that Magic Keyboard, it only mentions, for the 12.9 anyway, it only mentions the newest one, not the previous gen. So that, now the 11-inch, even with the newer Magic Keyboard, says that it works with all of them. So I feel like they have really made this confusing, and the fact that they have not said anything clearly is, first of all, bad. They've got to know this is a controversy. It's all over, like, news sites. I mean, obviously, they've got to know this. So I'm concerned. But I think, to your point, you're probably right, because they said the same thing about cases for, I think it was the 10 and the 10S, which I think technically do work. But it's just like there's a little bit of tolerance of doesn't look right. I'm hoping that's the case. I suspect that's probably the case, because even with like screen protectors and stuff, as a lot of people have pointed out, they are larger, and there's more of a thickness than the thickness of this, the difference between this and the other one. So I am optimistic that it will work.
I think I've seen like cases, like full on cases that are compatible with the Magic Keyboard. So I think you're right about that.
Now, here's the other thing. Logitech and Bridge also announced new keyboard cases for less than the Magic Keyboard. And if it turns out that I have to get a new keyboard, I might just go with one of those, because they look excellent. I don't think they're going to be out in time, but they look excellent. And the Bridge one, I had a Bridge one before, but it was too tight on the actual, and it made it too heavy, which so does the Magic Keyboard. But the Logitech one you had from last generation, and I think you said you really liked it, right?
Yeah, it's really good. There's some things that are worse about it, like it's a lot more protective, which is good and bad, but it's like you like slip it into like this cover, whereas like the other one, it's easier to take the iPad out with Apple's, but like it's half the cost. The keys are like just as good. It has a function key row if you want to change like volume and brightness, like right on the keyboard. So it's good. And it has like a Surface style, like a kickstand in the back, so you can adjust the angles and stuff like that. It's a great keyboard if you don't want to spend like a ton of money on one of them.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing which of the, and now I think I'll see if I can get a hold of Logitech and get them to send one over, because I really want to get one for the 12.9. I need to have some type of keyboard for that. So I'm optimistic that it will work with the existing. I would say if you're a consumer, don't necessarily buy the Magic Keyboard until you see what everyone else says.
Yes.
That question will be answered quick, because all the tech YouTubers and stuff are legitimately going to answer that question right away. So you won't have to wait long. You won't have to wait long. But I think what we're going to find out is that the existing one does work. It's just not completely optimal. But we'll see. The only reason that it would not work, I think, if I look at this now, I'm looking at my Magic Keyboard now. If you're looking at the live stream, you can see this. The only way it wouldn't work is if these little tabs on the back are in a slightly different place. Otherwise, it's going to work. Whether it stays on and doesn't fall off the thing, I don't know. But as long as those little spikes hit the little metal parts on the back of the iPad Pro, it will work. But, I mean, who knows? We don't know. And they're not answering the question. What the heck, man?
That's the weirdest part of this. You think, like, you think there'd be, like, an official statement from Apple, which I think maybe gives more credit to our argument of like, yeah, it'll work, but, you know, it's not as nice. It's not like up to like the Apple perfect standard. Because like if they flat out go, no, it doesn't work. And then you like, if YouTubers get this and they connect it to the back and like, hey, you know what? It works. Oh, mm-hmm. I close it. You know, it's like a little like, you know, tighter or looser. I don't know. Whatever. It still works. Whereas like if Apple says, you know, if Apple says, yeah, it works just fine, and then you get like a couple other people going, oh, it's not as nice of a fit, blah, blah, blah. So it's weird that Apple hasn't cleared this up, though. You think like Apple PR, especially with all the, I've seen tons of articles, tons of people talking about this. You think they'd want to clear that up immediately.
Yeah, I'm going to one more time. And the other thing is like, you can't, I'm looking at their website right now. There is no other option for the Magic Keyboard. Well, hold on. I want to make sure they don't have the option for the existing Magic Keyboard, because when you look at it, you go view pricing. Oh, it does now say fifth, fourth, and third generation compatibility. It did not say that when I shot my video. So they've since changed it, apparently. So, okay. So we're good there. It will work for, It just says, so when you hit the down arrow on their website, it says fifth generation, but when you go to the spec sheet, it says that it's good for fifth, fourth, and third iPad Pro, which, if we're being honest, third and fourth are the same darn thing, really. So I'm trying to think why it would be any different. And like, what could it be that would not? And again, this is based off of one website that's kind of guessing. They don't have it. So I don't know why. And then Verge said that they confirmed with sources familiar with the matter. But who is that? Did they call up their friend that works at the Apple store? And the guy was like, yeah, I don't think it works. And that dude's never seen it either. Like, I don't know that. Anyway, we'll figure that out. But more importantly than that is the iPad Pro itself. And the fact that it's a couple of things. Number one, the M1 processor, which is super exciting. But as I pointed out in my video, that's exactly the processor that would have been in it all along. The M1 is technically like an A14X. So basically, it's not as surprising to see this chip in the iPad Pro. It's more surprising to see this chip in like MacBooks and Mac Minis and stuff like that, because it's actually a laptop or a tablet processor that's been kind of beefed up a little bit. So it's not surprising that it's in the iPad Pro. It's more surprising that it's in the other stuff. Having said that, it's an incredible processor or system on a chip, as someone in my comment section pointed out. It does a lot of things. It takes the iPad Pro to another level. But why? And I made a big deal about this in the video that I made. If you have not seen it, hit my channel up. You got to see it. The reality is this. There's not a lot of reasons for a iPad or any tablet to have 8 gigs, let alone 16 gigs of RAM. Now, the 8 gigs is a reasonable enough bump up from 6 of the existing year, of our current year, to say, okay, yeah, it went up. But I mean, if we really know anything about the way iOS works and macOS works, you don't really even need that much RAM. 16 makes zero sense. There's never been a moment in Apple's history where they've had a ridiculous amount of RAM in any of their kind of non-computer products. It's just never been a thing. The phones don't, tablets don't. Watches don't. It's not a thing. They give you just a little bit more than what you need, and that's it. 16 at the higher storage levels is suspicious. And if we take into consideration some of the leaks and stuff that John Prosser told us on this show last year, that he has seen a working version of Final Cut Pro on the iPad, it starts to make sense. And as I said in my video, you need the storage for that, which means the 1 and 2 terabyte versions, and you need the RAM for that. And that is where the 16 gigs of RAM makes sense. Any other situation to me, and feel free to disagree, does not make sense to me. What do you think?
100% agree with you. There's never been a time where Apple went on a stage, introduced an iPad, and in their slide had the information right there for the memory configurations. When I first saw that, when I was watching the event and I saw that, I went, whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait, take a step back here. You can order RAM configurations on the iPad. Now, it's a little bit more complicated than that because they tied them to the storage configurations, which I'm kind of like, why'd you have to do that? Because I don't need a 1 terabyte iPad, but I am kind of interested to get the 16 gigabyte version just to see, like, what is up with this? Like, why are you making this configuration when Travis is 100% right? If they don't have any future plans for this and they're just including a 16 gigabyte configuration just because, it doesn't make sense. I can't think of really any iPad app that would be able to take advantage of that. And I don't see how it would make even iPad OS that much better of an experience, because I think partly the reason why a lot of apps close in the background is more to save battery life rather than RAM constraints at this point. So I think they brought this upon themselves if they weren't ready for it, because we've had these discussions of like, why isn't Final Cut on the iPad? Why don't you bring more pro apps on the iPad? Some people are even more extreme. Some people go, hey, can I just get Mac OS and run it on my iPad? Look at this iPad Pro. Look at it in a 256 gigabyte configuration. Go load up, you know, the MacBook Pro, the MacBook Air with the M1s. What configuration are they in? 256 gigabytes, 8 gigabytes of memory, M1 chip. Everything now is literally the same. Even the storage configurations, you can get these up to 2 terabytes on the iPad. What can you get the M1 Max up to? 2 terabytes. What's the max memory you can get on an M1 Mac? 16 gigabytes. What is the difference between an iPad Pro with an M1 and an M1 Mac. Even the new M1 iMac, which we're going to talk about later, 2 terabytes, 16 gigabytes. What is the difference between these computers? They even have Thunderbolt now with the new iPad Pro. Everything is the same, besides one has a touchscreen and is a tablet form factor, and the other doesn't. The other is a traditional form factor. So, you know, before I would go, well, you know, hey, it's Apple's vision. You know, they want iPad OS. It's a good OS. I love iPad OS. I prefer Mac OS for what I do, but you know, I was one of the people like, well, I wouldn't want to run Mac OS on an iPad because, you know, it runs on a different chip architecture. It runs on, you know, whatever the A12X. And you know, I don't know if they could just port over Mac OS. I don't think they could do that. Well, now they literally have the same exact chip. They have the same memory configurations. And now I'm changing like sides as I see this stuff because I'm like, why can't I run Final Cut on this? Why can't I run Logic on this? Why can't I take all the Mac apps I love and run them on this? Hey, if you're buying that $350 Magic Keyboard, which has a trackpad, what makes this different from a MacBook Air and a MacBook Pro at this point?
Yeah, and I want to mention, I did talk about this in my video, that because Rene Ritchie mentioned this, that the 8 and 16 are... those numbers specifically are tied to the chipset. Like you go from 8 to 16 and stuff like that. And Thunderbolt can be done. But here's the thing. You don't have to put 16 gigs of RAM on any of this stuff. As I pointed out, if you can buy a MacBook Air with 512 gigs of storage, or I think you can go to terabyte or something too, right? Without changing the RAM configuration. They are not tied together. And Apple doesn't just, and then someone was like, well, they're doing it to make more value. When does Apple give you more value? Bro, they're selling cables for like $30. What are they worried about giving? They're taking power adapters out of phones. Like, there's no reason for this. They don't do that.
I bet you any amount of money. I think there is a bigger plan for these iPads, obviously. I really don't think Apple added 16 gigabyte configurations without, you know, some other plan to like make these to make these run Mac apps. I think in some version, even if it's Final Cut Touch version, which I would be perfectly fine with. Mm-hmm. I think there's a plan here for bigger apps that maybe won't even work on older iPads at this point. And I would be fine with that, honestly. If M1 is the transition for these new apps, I think that's a good line in the sand to draw. You have to do it eventually. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's do it now. I would bet you, though, that there was like an internal argument. I mean, Travis, you worked at big companies before.
Yes.
I bet there's like an argument in Apple of like, hey, we're going to do a 8 gigabyte and a 16 gigabyte configuration. And there's someone like, we have never offered RAM configurations on iPad before because we like the we don't want users to worry about it. We like the simplicity. Just tie those to the two storage configurations at the top. Don't make users pick between these specifications. Just make it simple.
Yep.
I could bet you that argument took place. One side won out over the other. I think the wrong side won out if you're going to make these more like computers, but they wanted to keep that process simple. They wanted people to go into a store and go, I want iPad Pro, this storage, that end of conversation, get them out of the store.
So let's talk about a couple things. Number one, at those storage sizes, you're talking about exceedingly a ridiculous amount of money for a tablet, right? And those people are not going to be as sensitive price-wise to professional level software. We're talking about $300 editing software. So you don't necessarily have to worry about someone who just bought a normal iPad trying to buy. I mean, first of all, they'll hide it from the App Store. They'll just look at the processors and everything on the iPad and say it's not compatible. But you don't necessarily have to worry about someone who can't hit that spec trying to buy something that's $300 when their iPad was $300, right? So I don't think you're going to have to worry about that. You're looking at the sensibilities of the people that are going to spend that much money on that iPad Pro, what they're going to use it for. The iPad Pro is obviously, they've been ever since it came out, it's faster than a laptop. It's going to be, you know, you can do all this stuff. They're still showing it on like doing virtual, like AR stuff, like doing all this stuff. Do your entire production on your iPad Pro. Like these, they're very much now, neither one of us are saying, and one of the things that people said and misunderstood my video, we're not saying that Mac OS is coming to the iPad. We're saying professional level apps are, which is a different conversation and much more likely to happen, especially when WWDC is right around the corner.
Yeah, listen, at this point, and you know, I'll be the first to say, I'm not like an engineer. Maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but I look at both of these products. They both have the same chips, same memory, same storage configurations. How hard is it to take these new apps that Apple has that have been 100% optimized for M1? We're not talking about taking old Intel apps. That's not happening, right? Like, don't end a conversation. If it's an Intel app and it ran on x86, it's not going to be on your iPad. But Apple has a version of Final Cut. It runs amazing on the M1. Why can't I just put that on my iPad? Now, it's Apple. Maybe they want to make a touch version. They don't want you to always have a trackpad and keyboard. Hey, I get that. You know what? You have the vision. I get that, but you know, there's touch editors like LumaFusion that do a great job. I'm sure Apple of all people can figure this out. They have iMovie for touch already. I've used that before. It works pretty well. So they can get Final Cut running on here. I'm guessing pretty easily. You know, they can get Logic running on there pretty easily. There's a lot of good Mac apps. Xcode is one for developers. That's how they make all these apps, right? All these apps, how you make them is with Xcode. So they can have a version of Xcode. I think they wouldn't really have to do much because it's like you're just inputting text at that point. They can bring that over to the iPad at this point if it's already running on the M1. So I think Apple opened the conversations themselves, right? If they called this A14X, we wouldn't really probably be having this conversation of like, hey, it's like you have an M1 in here now. It needs to run it. I feel like Apple knows they brought this conversation onto themselves. I think they probably are ready to deliver this at WWDC. It's only, what, 2 months away at this point? I think they're probably ready to answer that question very quickly with the next generation of the iPad software. But if they don't, I feel like that is a whole can of worms at this point. You've always had the separate chipsets, which you could always get away with. You always had the different, you know, memory configurations. There was always maybe like an illusion of like, maybe the iPad runs differently than I think. And, you know, it's a harder project than I would think. But now when you have the M1 in all these machines and it scales all the way up to an iMac, you have to imagine that it's coming. These pro apps are coming, even if it's still going to run iPadOS. You know, I would love if Apple, I don't see them doing this, by the way. I think it'll still be iPadOS, whatever that looks like. I would love Apple to be like, you know what? Hey, you want to run macOS on this while it's docked in your Magic Keyboard? Here's a little toggle in the settings, and we're going to let you do that. I don't think Apple ever does that, but I would like to see that. I think that's a cool thing. Because hardware-wise, especially this 12.9-inch iPad Pro, I think, like, if you're looking at the price, right? If you take a 1 terabyte iPad Pro and you get the 16 gigabytes of memory, it's $1,800 for 1 terabyte, 16 gigabytes of memory. That is, I believe, $100 cheaper for an M1 MacBook Pro at the same configuration. And those machines are going to be similarly capable. But the iPad Pro actually has more hardware advantages. I mean, I know you don't have the keyboard yet, you know, we'll just leave that out. But the iPad Pro has more hardware advantages than that MacBook Pro. It has the faster refresh screen rate, and it also has this new mini LED display, which we didn't talk about yet. I guess we talk about that now. And that new mini LED display, Travis, like on paper, you know, I think we're both display guys. On paper, like you look at the specs they put out there, 1,000,000:1 contrast ratio, that is OLED level of contrast ratio. I think like the first generation of OLED on iPhone was 1,000,000:1 contrast ratio. This screen technology sounds real, 1,000 nits, 1,600 nits in HDR video of peak brightness. That's one area where OLEDs are actually behind on. Right. They don't get that bright. 1,000 nits HDR video. This display sounds like it's going to look amazing.
Yeah.
Better than I thought.
Yeah. And I'm excited to get a hold of one. John Prosser also said that if you want one of these, make sure that you are front of line and order it, which is what, this Friday or something like that? So
yeah,
at the end of the day, I mean, I'll be waking up at 9 o'clock in the morning trying to do this stupid thing, ordering this stupid thing. But yeah, I mean, again, $1,800 for a tablet makes no sense unless you're going to be able to make money with it. And that's why I think WWDC, we're going to see something interesting, because I just can't even say $1,800 tablet. Like, there's nothing about that that makes sense unless it is professional grade. Now, we're starting to run out of time, and I actually want to just real briefly talk about the iMac, because what I want to do is next week, Greg, what we should do is invite Renee, Luke, and Gary, and see if they'll come talk about the M1 Mac iMacs, because of course those guys are really heavy into that. Might be another super show that we did. You know, we did one a while back that everyone seemed to really like. So maybe we'll just touch on it briefly. And we all, you know, promote, of course, your video you did, which I thought was excellent. And then save some of the meaty parts for next week. What do you think about that?
We could do that. I gotta, you know, now I'm getting all nervous. I'm like, oh no, I contact everyone. I gotta assemble the Justice League in a week. I'm gonna be like Batman. You know, this could be the Snyder.
I think that would be a great podcast. But let's briefly talk about it. Now, for me, someone who I'm gonna give my 2 cents in this week, because next week you can forget about it. It's not gonna happen. Couple things. Number one, like I've said, I always thought I'm still kind of new to the Mac ecosystem. I thought iMac was consumer level only, which is why I was not surprised by the iMac and not disappointed by the iMac presentation. Whereas people were thinking, you know, iMac Pro and stuff, which I always thought was like Mac Pro. Like, I just thought in my mind that iMac was consumer and Mac was professional, but it's not. So when I saw everything come out, I thought the colors looked cool. I don't have a problem with the chin because I'm not going to be looking at the chin. The other thing is it actually shows you the color of what you bought, so you actually see it on one side versus the other. Like, I'm kind of excited about it. It's a little spendy for me to have as something that's not my primary device, which it would not be. I mean, I'd almost be better off if I'm willing to downgrade this display, just getting a Mac Mini. I saw Gary talk about the refurbs on Apple for Mac Minis is like $550, which is insane. Insane. Oh, yeah. And just hook that up to your TV or something. So, you know, for that, you know, for a use case where I'm not going to use it primarily, even though I want all the colors, I love like three of the colors, I probably won't be partaking. But for sure, your quote, average person walks into an Apple store that wants a Mac, That's a hell of a deal. You get the keyboard, the monitor, the mouse, everything all in one. Why wouldn't you want that? It's not a terrible price either. So I think it's actually a darn good product. It's just the people that are complaining, it's not for them.
The benchmark of a better product is it's better than the one it replaces. This thing is way better than the one it replaces. The old 21-inch iMac was kind of like a joke in a way, because for like professionals and stuff, no one really wanted to use that machine. Number one, the screen was really small for like a desktop screen, in 2021. 24 inches is still small for a lot of people, but you know, a 24-inch display is fine for a lot of people. I'm planning to use this M1 iMac. I think I'll get by on 24-inch display. This is going to be such a better machine than whatever you could get with the 21-inch iMac. The design, I think, I really like it. So we can probably talk about design here. We'll save some other stuff for the other conversation next week. But my whole video that if you want to watch on my channel was talking about this design, because a lot of people were really upset by this design. They wanted something that was basically like an iPad Pro on a Apple stand, which I think honestly would look pretty cool. But Apple chose to go with this design because, like Travis said, you got all these nice colors that they came out with, 7 different colors for an iMac desktop, which they're, you don't even sell a lot of desktop computers anymore. So that's kind of nice that they gave you so many different color options. The front area where a lot of people are kind of getting mad at are in two areas. The first is like the chin. I saw a question in the chat saying, where did I see that? From Raphael, who says, I don't mind the white bezel or the chin, but why eliminate the Apple logo? The front looks like a cheap knockoff. With that said, the back of the machine is beautiful. I think I know why there is no Apple logo on the chin. Because so many people thought they were going to get rid of this design element. I almost feel like Apple didn't put the logo on there because I feel like people would be immediately cynical and go, The only reason Apple kept the chin there was so they could show you the Apple logo. Like I'm thinking in my head, like if an Apple logo was there when they showed off this design, so many people would go, they only kept that there so you would have to stare at the Apple logo. But now we're in like this weird situation where it's the reverse. There is no Apple logo and people are like, well, why can't I stare at the Apple logo all day? So it's completely weird to me because there's so many people that complain like, oh, people only buy this thing because there's an Apple logo on it. And now there's people going, where's the Apple logo? So it's really weird. But I think the white bezels look better with the lighter colors they went to choose. Putting like those bold colors on the front of that Mac, I think maybe might look distracting, especially in like a lot of people's like homes and stuff like that. Like making it like too bold could have been like a big mistake there. Whereas like these like lighter shades, like a light blue, like if I put that there, it's probably going to look like the iPad Air, right? It's almost going to look like silver in a way. So it's like, all right, that's not bad. And then you get like the big, bold, beautiful colors on the back of the device. So I really like the design. Going back to what you said, Travis, this is the consumer level iMac. I feel like for too long, the iMac has, and we've talked about this on the last GadgetCast, because you were confused about what is the iMac for? Is this a consumer level product or a pro product? And you're right. The iMac has kind of walked that thin line of like, is this consumer? Is this pro? Now we know that this is a consumer level product. Obviously, right. It has the M1. You can use it for professional, but this is aimed directly at consumers. I think this gives Apple the chance to correct the mistake and have this as the iMac. And they still have the 27 inch they have to replace. They can call that iMac Pro. And there will be no more confusion in the lineup. Yeah. Hey, consumer level is iMac. You want the Pro version? Here's iMac Pro. It won't come in all these, new colors. It'll be space gray, silver, dark. It'll blend into professional environments. I'm guessing maybe they even get rid of the chin on that one. They make it look like really professional. So, I think it's a really smart move. I think a lot of the people complaining about this design were the ones who probably weren't going to buy this product anyway. They were more in the market for something like an iMac Pro. And for the consumers and stuff like that, I showed it to like everyday people, like my mom. I'm like, what do you think about the new iMac design? She goes, I love the pink. I love the pink. Yep. That's the consumer level. I love the pink. I want that one. They're not thinking about the M1. They're not thinking about that. It's going to run great for them. They're going to love that it's fast and, it's not slow. It doesn't make a sound, right? They're going to love all that stuff about it from a consumer level perspective. But what did my mom say immediately when she saw the iMac? I love the pink. I want that one.
Yeah. So. And you know what? It's funny because I love the colors of some of these, I'm trying to figure out a way to make it make sense to have in my house. And the only thing I can think of is to put it on the island bar in my kitchen, which, by the way, is one of the things that they showed in the presentation. And then you could use it for like looking up recipes or, if you're in there cooking or something and you want to watch a video or something, like it totally makes sense for that. So I don't know. I mean, it's pretty, all you
Travis,
need is a power
don't
cord.
Tell me that. No, don't tell me that.
I mean, I'm almost
sold
on it.
I'm
going to
get two iMac. You know what? I'm going to get this one to review. I'm going to keep it. I'm sure I'm going to get the bigger version of whatever this ends up being. That might happen to this iMac. We'll see. Maybe this is going to be like Google Hub Max times 20. This is the HomePod on the screen, people.
Because here's the thing. It only needs one cable. That's what makes it so perfect for a situation like that, because it's just power and you don't need like three with like the keyboard and everything. It's everything else is wireless. So it could be on an island table in the kitchen for like multi-use. Gary, who's in the chat, check your DMs. We're going to try to talk about this more in depth next week. That is my current possible use case that I'm considering. We'll see.
Oh man, you just blew my mind with that. Cause I was like wondering, I'm like, I'm obviously going to get this. I love the design. Like I want this in my collection anyway. And I'm like, what am I going to do when I get the bigger one? I'm like, oh man, I'm like looking, can I do that? Yeah. Mm. Whoa. They spent some time going over like the speaker system on this. No one's heard these yet, but like iMacs usually have like pretty good speakers in them. Travis, you might've
cracked the code, right?
crack the code, man.
Now, not that's everyone
gonna,
can do that. Like, it doesn't make
such
sense
a
for
flex.
Everyone. But I think for people looking for a reason to get one, it's like the perfect use case. So
that's such a flex.
Because the other thing, the other thing is you're cooking and you get a video call. You don't have to pick up your phone. You just answer the phone on your iMac. Just have it on and you know, there's your, hi, everybody. Hey,
they need to bring, they need to bring that center stage feature to the iMac.
Yeah.
What do they do?
I suspect they will. I suspect they will. But yeah, so anyway, we're gonna have to shut down because I want to save a lot of this conversation for next week when we have the Super Show. Hopefully we have the Super Show. I want to thank everyone for joining us. I hope that this was as entertaining as it was for, I mean, I'm kind of hyped for this stuff. Slowly becoming an Apple channel. I don't know. We'll have to see what's going on with that. Yeah, so listen, we have, I would love to hear your comments and your feedback. Links are in the description of this YouTube video if you're watching the stream. If you're on Apple Podcasts, first of all, leave us a review. I saw some people left some reviews recently. Thank you very much. And definitely reach out to us. So we have email and we have voicemail in the show notes. So with that, we are going to say goodbye because next week we're going to put your ears full of M1 Mini Mac goodness. And you're going to be sick of us. But listen, it's one thing. We're just talking about essentially that with hopefully some of the best YouTubers in the business doing that with us. So anyway, he's Greg. I'm Travis. We'll see you next week.